Welcome back in everyone to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited about today's episode because we have a brand new show that is being put on by some huge players, both here in the city and in the Hudson Valley. And joining us to talk to us about this incredible work, we have the co-conceiver and director, Nathan Winkelstein. Of course, he's here to talk to us about the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival in a world premiere co-production with Red Bull Theater and Bedlam, presenting Medea Reversed by Luis Quintero. It's, again, co-conceived and directed by Nathan Winkelstein, and it's adapted from Euripides and premiering June through August at the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting hvshakespeare.org. This is your chance to see the show firsthand before it makes its New York premiere later this fall. But we've got you on the ground floor because we've got the co-conceiver and director with us today to talk to us about it. So with that, let us welcome in our guest, Nathan. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
I'm so happy to have you here. I am so excited to be talking about this great new show, Medea Reversed. This sounds so exciting, and I'm over the moon that so many great theater companies have come together to put this show on. We've got Hudson Valley Shakespeare, we've got your company, Red Bull Theater Company, and then Bedlam Theater. This is incredible. So as the co-conceiver and the director of this great show, why don't we have you start by telling us a little bit about what this show is about?
Absolutely. So most people listening, I think, know the basic story of Medea. And that is a woman scorned, goes through a whole series of events ranging from exacerbating to completely infuriating. And it ends up in her killing her own kids. And then, depending on how you feel about it, either burning to death in her house or ascending to the gods in a fiery chariot. This is a play that has been adapted many, many times, but we were interested in tackling this play in a slightly different way and tackling the entire concept of adapting non-English language plays into the English language in a slightly new fashion. And that led to us using this adaptation.
That is amazing. I love that. And I mean, this is a staple show for anyone who's ever remotely studied theater. This is one of those iconic Greek tragedies. So where did you come up with the idea to create this work, especially in the style?
Absolutely. So I'm a deeply ensconced in classical theater in this country. And one of the questions that constantly comes up as a classic theater practitioner is how do we expand the canon? And one of the major ways to expand the canon is to explore plays from other languages. Now, obviously, doing a Greek play is not expanding the canon. The Greek plays have been around and have had many English translations for a while. But I have become more and more interested in what the most compelling format is for adapting non-English language plays into English. And I wanted to utilize the Greeks as something of a proof of concept, something of a let's try this method out on a play that we know is tried and true and see if we can make it sing in a way that it hasn't sung before. And that concept is basically, often you will see adaptations fall into two categories. You'll have it move into an English language verse that is trying to pay homage to the Greek hexameter verse structure, or you will have a very contemporary adaptation of a play, something that takes the themes of the play but makes it a living room drama, for example, or something like that. And I was curious about finding something a little different from that. I was curious about taking the play and adapting it into English language and specifically American verse structures. And so that we can still capture the scope of an archetypal performance like a Medea, while bringing it into a verse structure that is ours in exactly the same way that the Greek verse structure was the Greeks. It was something they all understood and were fluent in. And I wanted us to have that. I didn't want there to be any separation between the verse structure and us. And there are many American verse structures. There's Afrofuturism, there's jazz, there's blues, there's musical theater, and of course, there's also rap. And rap is in many ways the most dynamic and easiest to move into a dramatic structure with, because it is so, you can deliver so much information and you can deliver it in such a compelling way. So this project, I was very interested in doing it. I started writing one using jazz as my base inspiration. And then I was talking with Luis Quintero, who at the time I knew primarily as an actor. And he said, wouldn't you be interested? Wouldn't you like this thing that I wrote for the play I was in right now? And he was doing a production of Macbeth. And he had written a rap from the point of view of Malcolm, which was the character he was playing. And it was, I remember listening to it. This was during COVID. I remember listening to it and going, this is incredible. This is wonderful. You're rhyming Caesarian with Valerian, and you're so complex with your structure and your language and your assonance and alliteration, et cetera. It's amazing. How about we work on a play together? How I would love for you to take this talent and for you to try to tackle Medea. And Luis, who is a genius, jumped at it and had the first choral song written a week later. It has, of course, changed slightly since then, but only slightly. And away we ran. And from there, we have found all of the partnerships between Greek verse and this story and the history of rap, because this story is about a immigrant who comes to a new country and who is feared and despised for the power that she has. And very similar to the rap coming over from Jamaica through Bob Marley, and then growing up in the Bronx and coming out of this desire to find home in rap and hip hop. And so there's lots of commonalities between the two genres, and the play has just popped off since then.
That is incredible. I love the number of inspirations and styles that have been infused in this show. This is amazing. So what has it been like developing this work, especially with, you know, so many other companies working together as well?
So this has been an interesting developmental process, because in many ways the play is unique in its structure. We still are dancing around whether or not this is a musical, a play with music, whether it's a concert with dramatic structure. It sort of sits inside all of these things. And learning what the piece was really fascinating. So the very first workshop we did, which Red Bull sponsored, we just had actors in the room. And at that time we were planning on just having it be a verse play, just having people speaking it, no instrumentation, no anything else. And we came up with the idea that maybe it would be interesting, just from a developmental process, to bring a beatboxer into the space, just to see what happened. Because of course, percussion and breaks are so important inside the hip hop culture. That's really what the breaks in the MCing is really what generated a large part of that. Some of the pillars of hip hop come from that. And we were interested in just like, what would we learn? We had no intention of necessarily keeping a beatboxer in the play, but what would we learn? And having a beatboxer in the play opened the play up, and we went, oh my goodness, what happens if we add a guitarist? What happens if we add a bass? And slowly, through input from the beatboxer, Mark Martin, who's an ex-US champion beatboxer and an incredible artist, input from Jacob Ming Trent, who is so didactic with his dramaturgy, we slowly developed, through a series of workshops and then a series of readings, this aesthetic that is half hip hop concert, half play. And I also think in many ways is what classical theater used to be. It's very interactive with the audience. It's very engaged. The audience can speak back, repeat back. I dream of doing it with a standing room pit like a concert would be. That is where it has ended up finding itself. And then, and as we went along, I was inviting producers and more of them jumped on board. Hudson Valley has a long history with Luis Quintero. Eric Tucker at Bedlam has a long history with me and also with Hudson Valley. And they fell in love with the project and wanted to support something new and unique.
That is incredible. I am living for this. All I was waiting for now is like to hear you like start talking about wanting to build like the classic Greek stage and hide the chorus or the musicians, you know, everyone. That's incredible. I love that. I love the way, I just love how you all played to put this play together. Essentially, you literally utilized the word of the thing you were doing and you played. This is so much fun. So with this being a reimagining of this classic tale, is there a message or a thought you are hoping the audiences take away from this?
It's a great question. It's a great question. And I think it actually comes to this play deals with a couple of my core beliefs about theater. One of them being something I've already mentioned, which is the formation of community and that this play's interaction with the audience, lack of a fourth wall, we're all in this experience together, is a live action community builder in a way that film and television can never be. It's one thing that I find that I feel very strongly about. The other is this question of messaging. And it's not, there's no hard and fast rule here, but I firmly believe that theater artists' superpower is empathy. And therefore, it is our job to explore the depths of the human soul and try to understand why someone would do what they do without necessarily passing judgment one way or the other. That is not our job. And in fact, if we tell the audience what to think, we don't allow them to think. And we feel very strongly that in this play, I feel that Euripides did this and that Luis Quintero is also doing it, that this play is about how can someone be driven to do the unforgivable? Because Medea's a boogeyman, right? Medea's the woman who kills her kids. Medea was already that when Euripides wrote the play. It's not this play that caused that. That myth already existed. Euripides wrote this play to explore the humanity behind that choice. And that doesn't mean that Medea is forgivable. It also doesn't mean that she's necessarily evil. And so what I hope that the audience takes from this is a spirited debate over the actions of this anti-hero and over whether or not it was her fault, the fault of the society that suppressed her, or some combination therein that led to what she did. I also very much hope that we can remind everyone that Medea's a freaking demigod and she's awesome. Like, it doesn't mean, and I mean awesome in the biblical sense. She fills us with awe. Not she's great, but she is full of power. And this was a demigod walking on earth whose moralities and rules might be a little different than ours. And what does that mean? So I hope that people leave the theater debating Medea. I have already had the conversations where some people are like, I really like the play, but I've got a problem with Medea. And I was like, of course you have a problem with Medea. She killed her kids. And then there's other people who are like, Medea's like a badass badass feminist icon now. And I'm like, yeah, but she also killed her kids, right? Like it's both at the same time. And we're actually working, we're developing a post-show aspect of this production where after the show, this is also a big thing in, this is about the community building, where after the show, there will be an opportunity for the audience and the theater makers to engage, ask questions of one another, have a drink together, hang out into the night and converse, because I really think that that's where the magic happens. So that's what I hope people take away. I'm not sure if I answered your question explicitly, but that's what came.
You nailed my question perfectly. That sounds fantastic. I love that. And truth be told, I like to think that I'm a learned man, but I completely forgot that Medea was a demigod. All I got wrapped up in is, well, she was a terrible, terrible person. She killed her kids, you know, right. But it was like that. Oh yeah, she is. Okay. I can't forget about that. So I love that's, you're kind of restoring that a little bit still. You're not completely washing away the bad things, but you're also being like, and don't forget all of this, though. Don't remember her for this one moment. She did all this, though. But also don't forget this.
Yeah, she did. One of the most compelling moments in the play is when she sings the song Sacred Rage. And she is, and we are cheering for her in that moment. She's so powerful. She's so epic. She is also conjuring a poisoned dress which slaughters a teenage girl and her father. And we, as the audience in that moment, exist just like she has to, with the fact that we are celebrating her power and her vengeance on Jason. And then right after that, we have to deal with the very human moment of the messenger arriving and going, this is what you did. This is the reality of what you did. And we get knocked around just like Medea does, because we always want to pursue vengeance. And it feels so great when we do. And sometimes it's deserved and justified, but that doesn't mean there's not pain that we cause as well. And that's the line that is being walked. And frankly, if we look at the world right now, it's something you see both on a macro global stage and in micro human to human stages all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to the show? And of course, you mentioned it's having its premiere up in the Hudson Valley, at the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival, but then it's coming here to New York in the fall. So far between those two productions, who all do you hope have access?
Well, our great hope, and it's not very easy to accomplish, our great hope is that we are able to attract both classic theater lovers who might be leery when they hear the word rap or hip hop and have an incorrect, or I don't want to say incorrect, they have a limited understanding of that culture because of the aspect of that culture that gets put forward on the news so often or in pop music so often, that I hope to be able to introduce a classic theater going audience to the incredible complexity, diversity, depth of thought that exists in rap and hip hop as a culture, in as hip hop culture and rap as a verse form. And on the other side, I hope that people who perhaps have more of an association with rap and hip hop and music and younger people who are leery of classical theater, who think that classical theater, and sometimes think correctly, that classical theater is a gatekept, primarily white artistic area, might also be able to come to this and see that there is, that does not have to be the case, even if it has been in the past, and that there is a world where that the stories of the ancients are for everybody, because they are, and that they are accessible to everybody. And we're pursuing that through both the nature of the project itself, but we're also pursuing that through ticket initiatives and student matinees and lots of other elements in terms of marketing and development, where we are trying to make sure that everybody knows that this is happening and that everybody who wants to see it has the ability to see it.
Well, for the second part of our interview, we love to let our listeners get to know our guests a little bit more. Pick your brains, if you will. And I would love to start with our perennial first question, which of course is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
So, of course, Shakespeare is my first love. I've devoted my life to him. I think that Shakespeare, for a playwright that wrote 400 years ago, has accomplished something that's almost impossible. The human race's history of evolution is not one of physical evolution, right? Tigers would kick our ass if that was what it was about. It's the evolution of the mind and the evolution of the id, the self-knowledge. And Shakespeare's characters to this day are, by that structure, more evolved humans than we are. The self-knowledge, the self-understanding, the self-questioning of characters like Hamlet, characters like Rosalind, even the younger characters like Juliet as they discover love, is something that we still haven't matched as a human race, as a species. And until we do, Shakespeare will always be relevant and always be able to teach us something about ourselves. And I find that very, very special. And that is where my love of verse and love of language comes from. More contemporarily, it will not surprise you that I actually think most of the heir apparents to Shakespeare exist in the musical theater sphere, and most specifically Sondheim and Miranda. I think the complexity with which both of those artists utilize all of the tools of their trade to give us layered meaning and layered involvement with their characters and their story is Shakespeare-esque, and in some ways surpasses Shakespeare. And that is very exciting to me. And both of them are a semi-inspiration for Medea as well. This idea of, okay, I know how to get every iota out of verse work, but what happens if we add melody lines? What happens if we add beat lines? What not just, oh good, it's a musical now, but how do those elements increase our understanding of the story and our understanding of the character? And I think that the greats do that. They utilize every element of their art to teach us something about the story we're watching. So Sondheim and Miranda really stand out in that regard to me.
Wonderful inspirations there that cannot be debated about their greatness. I love that list. There's nothing wrong with, like, I don't know, the legends, if you will. Nothing wrong with it. They're legends for a reason, you know. I would love to know now, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
My favorite part about working in the theater is the moment when magic happens in live theater. The moment when the audience is so fully with a character, and a character is with the audience in a particular way, which there's nothing else like. It's hard to describe. I think most people who listen to your podcast probably have experienced it. And it can be comedic, it can be dramatic, it can be devastating, it can be uplifting. But there are moments where we connect and we are fully with that human being on stage, and that human being on stage is solely fully supported by us off stage. That teaches us, again, I think, the power of community and the power of empathy, the power of feeling what another person feels, even if we disagree with them, even if they're making choices that we wouldn't choose, even if they have beliefs that we don't believe, is feeling their common humanity and the common humanity in the space. Those moments are really special, and theater is one of the few spaces that still strives to do it. Most other spaces seem more interested nowadays in playing people against one another, in playing, in emphasizing our differences instead of emphasizing our commonalities. And is that optimistic and fluffy and everything? Yes, sure. But also, that's what theater's for. And I actually think it's really, really hard. I actually think it's really, really hard to truly understand, love, forgive, believe in people who are different than you are. And I think that theater at its best accomplishes that.
Oh my gosh, amen. Yes, 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 yes. Again, put that on a t-shirt. Let's get it out to the masses. That I absolutely believe that in a heartbeat. And now we have arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
I think that my favorite theater memory is seeing Sweeney Todd with Michael Cerveris and Patti LuPone. And I don't even really know why. I think that what I fell in love with that day was the idea that even at the highest level, even on Broadway, the greatest work is unapologetically theatrical, because that piece was so minimal. The actors were playing their instruments. They were creating theater, and they were reveling in creating theater. There was no trying to hide it. It wasn't TV on stage. It was theater on stage. And you could both revel in the story and revel in these creators at the same time. And of course, Sweeney Todd's amazing. So there's also the very simple thing of like, Sweeney Todd's amazing. And it has been a lovely element of my career that there are now numerous people who were in that cast. That was a bit of a life-changing show for me, who I now consider my friends and my coworkers. And that is always something I remind myself of whenever I get down, of like, I'm doing okay. These people changed my life, and I'm blessed to call them friends. And so that was really the one that cemented for me that I was interested in doing this fully as a profession. And maybe deep down, I don't think I realized it at the time, but deep down probably was the beginning of my understanding that I was more interested in directing than in acting. I love acting, but what caught me about that show was the piece. The individual performances were amazing. It was Patti LuPone, Michael Cerveris, but the piece was what struck me, and what a director can do to amplify the talent is really exciting to me.
What a wonderful memory. Oh my gosh, I love that. That is an incredible show to have a memory attached to. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Do you or Red Bull Theater have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
We have nonstop projects coming down the pipeline, but I think that the one could pay the most attention to is our upcoming 20th anniversary festival, which is a collection of many titles. I think there are 9 titles in the course of 5 weeks that we're presenting. And so you'll definitely want to, this is going from, and I may not get the dates exactly right, but I believe it's April 16th to May 16th at the Shiner Theater at the Sheen Center. And we are doing, I am directing a workshop of Macbeth with Chuck Wudiawuji in the primary role. Jacob Ming Trent is doing a public presentation of a piece he's been working on, a one-man show called How Shakespeare Saved My Life. We are doing The Rover by Aphra Behn, the great female, classic female playwright starring Santino Fontana. We're doing a reading of The Tempest starring Patrick Page. We're doing a workshop of Titus starring Patrick Page. We're doing on and on, a new reading of a new play called God Spies by Bill Kane about Shakespeare during the plague. And then a play called Orr by Liz Duffy Adams about Aphra Behn. And in inspiration of the Medea, there's a reading of a play called Another Medea that we are also doing. So it's a huge collection of work. There's something for everyone. It's exhausting to put together, but I think it'll be a lot of fun for people to check out.
That all sounds incredible, especially Patrick Page doing anything Shakespeare. I mean, I would listen to the man just read phone books, but particularly watching him read and perform Shakespeare, I just, it's incredible. Absolutely amazing. So wonderful things lined up for this celebration. And that is a great lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Medea Reversed, or about you, or Red Bull Theater, or maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about Medea Reversed, you should probably sign up to be on the mailing lists for both Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival and Red Bull Theater and Bedlam. All three companies will be presenting more information about it soon. There is some information already on the websites at Red Bull and Hudson Valley, and more will be coming shortly. On the Red Bull website, my email is open for public consumption. It is not complicated. It is Nathan, my name, at redbulltheater.com. And if you would like to learn more about what all three companies are doing, Bedlam has a really exciting season coming up. Hudson Valley's summer season, the Medea will be working in rep with two other shows that you should definitely check out. And then Red Bull is always doing readings of rarely seen classics and workshops and education initiatives, acting intensives. There's a podcast that I host. So whatever you're interested in, there's always something for everyone if you're a theater goer.
Wonderful. Well, Nathan, thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak with me today and for getting us on the ground level of this amazing show. This is so exciting. I'm going to have to take a train up to the Hudson Valley now and check this out. And then I'm going to have to come and see it again when it comes down here in the fall. This is incredible. Congratulations to you and everyone involved with the show. This really is amazing to learn about. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I will tell the audience, if you really want to be on the ground floor, keep an eye on Luis Quintero. This is his first and very much not his last show. He is a very, very special talent.
Oh, good to know. Thank you for that. My guest today has been the director and co-conceiver, Nathan Winkelstein. He's part of the show Medea Reversed, which is by Luis Quintero and co-conceived and directed by Nathan Winkelstein. The Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival and a world premiere co-production with Red Bull Theater and Bedlam are presenting this show. The show is adapted from Euripides and it's playing June through August at the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. Before it makes its premiere here in New York, you can get your tickets and more information by visiting hvshakespeare.org. Also, if you'd like more information about this show, about Nathan, about all the amazing things happening at Red Bull Theater, where Nathan is the Associate Artistic Director at, and they've got some amazing things happening to celebrate their 20th anniversary, head to redbulltheater.com, or if you'd like to reach out to him, send him an email at nathan@redbulltheater.com. We will have all of this information posted on our episode description, as well as on our social media post. But this is an incredible opportunity, an incredible show. Let's all book our train together. We're going to go to the Hudson Valley, and then we're going to see it again in the fall when it comes here. The show, that the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival and a world premiere co-production with Red Bull Theater and Bedlam's presenting is Medea Reversed by Lewis Quintero, co-conceived and directed by Nathan Winkelstein, adapted from Euripides, playing July through August at the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.